Hi, I'm Chris Plum, head coach and CEO of the Carmel Swim Club. This is the Off the Deck podcast. Off the Deck champions, Carmel Swim Club's mission, teaching excellence through swimming for life. Carmel Swim Academy will provide an entry point for more children in central Indiana to have access to life-saving programs. It's true, drowning is the leading cause of injury-related death in children ages 1 to 4 and the second leading cause of death in children 5 to 9. But there is hope. Participation in formal swimming lessons can mitigate the risk of drowning by 88%. We are compelled to use our expertise in swimming to make our community safer and ensure every child has the opportunity to learn to swim. To learn more, visit www.carmelswimacademy.org. Gain Swimming also sponsors the Off the Deck podcast. Gain Swimming is the gold standard in dry land training. If you're interested in a consultation, please contact Chris Webb at chris@thegainnetwork.com. To learn more, visit www.thegainnetwork.com/gainswimming. And today's guest, very honored to have her on. Been waiting a while for this special moment. She is a 2011 graduate of Carmel High School, 2015 graduate of Purdue University, a dear friend of mine, an awesome swim coach. Please welcome Rhiannon Sheets to the podcast. Rhiannon, how are you today?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. Good. Thanks for getting on with us today.
Yeah, I've been waiting for my chance. So it's a big day.
I know you have. You might be the number one fan of the podcast.
Maybe.
Maybe. Well, why don't we start with you first? How did you, I mean, we're talking about saving lives and swimming. How did you get involved and started in this wonderful sport of swimming?
Some of my earliest memories were at my daycare. We went to an at-home daycare growing up, and she had a pool in her backyard. And every summer, like, she'd go and buy us all, you know, the one-size-fits-all flip-flops from Walmart. But there was always a day where everyone got to go, like, pick your flip-flops for the summer. And yeah, I mean, every day in the summer, we were just at the pool at daycare. And I'm pretty sure I've been told a story about, like, being told, like, don't get in until you have your floaties on. And I just jumped in. So I wanted to be in the water for a long time.
Yeah, you just threw caution to the wind, head first. I'm going after this.
Yeah, I mean, I think someone ended up having to jump in and get me. But I mean, it looked fun in there, so I wasn't going to wait.
Yeah. And then I know Smoky Row, the local outdoor pool, very close to your heart. And you spent some time in Summer League. You probably have a lot of great memories from that pool, right?
Oh, yeah, definitely. That was my first competitive swimming experience. It was probably 2 blocks from my house. So we moved here right before first grade and immediately joined that team. And made good friends with another swimmer on the team. And her mom told my mom, hey, like, we're going to join Carmel Swim Club when soccer season's over, if Rhiannon wants to join. And I didn't want to wait for soccer season to be over because I wasn't playing soccer, and started that fall.
And the rest is history, right?
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, Smoky Row, love it. I mean, we spent every day there, probably through 8th grade.
Yeah. And just the love and passion for the water, right? I mean, you just develop it over time. It's just, I mean, it's called home, right?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, I think as a swimmer, I wouldn't have been able to recognize that, but now it's weird calling myself an adult still, but as a person who's no longer a swimmer, we'll just say that, that is the quietest, most peaceful place I can find. I can't tell you a more quiet, more peaceful place. So,
And then you go on to have a lot of success at Carmel and Carmel High School. I know you were many times state champ, but one time individual state champ. You actually broke the 200 free state record held by the Olympian Lindsay Matenko, who's now, I mean, you know, national team director, so pretty big deal. You know, talk about your high school experience in you know, maybe some of the ups and downs and how it helped, you know, transform you and help shape the person you are today.
Yeah. That's a big question.
I always ask like really loaded deep questions.
How far can I go? Well, I mean, you just obviously knew about high school swimming growing up in Carmel and being on Carmel Swim Club, and challenge one at the time was called Stingrays. And, it was 6th, 7th, and 8th grade. So you already knew the older athletes, before you got to high school. So as an 8th grader, many of your friends were already in high school, already having those experiences. And so you were already very tied to it before you were even a part of it. And just watching them. And I remember, probably in 8th grade, seeing one of my best friends, Trish Regan, like win the 200 free or something as a freshman, and just thinking like, this is wild. Like, this is so crazy. And so just to see your friends doing that and knowing that it's coming for you and that you're going to be a part of that, is pretty special. And I think it really helps set the standard before you even got there. But so I came into high school very excited to be in high school and on the high school team. Like I said, I've been swimming here since I was 6. So I knew that's where I was headed and that's where I wanted to be. You know, I remember my freshman year asking one of the seniors like a month before high school state if she thought I was going to, I was like, do you think I'm going to make the team? Like, I was just so unaware. I had no idea. And she was like, yeah, you better get ready. It's coming. And you're going to need to swim fast. That year, I think I swam like 50 free and 100 fly, because 50 free, we needed somebody. And I guess I could do it under the state cut time. But just having that experience with athletes that you've known for a while and respected, even though you may have only been in high school with them for 1 year, but you'd known them growing up, and then being able to be teammates and kind of like equals to them while they're also still mentoring you, is a very empowering thing, that you don't walk into that meet and you didn't feel like a freshman. You felt like a part of Carmel High School swimming. And so, I mean, moving on through that, like, everyone had been my friends since I was 6. So being a part of that was more than just swimming. Like, you were doing this with your very, very best friends, your family. And so there's just a whole nother layer of that is really strengthening that bond and that motivation to be present and to be able to give your best, for reasons beyond just like, this is a high school or a streak or this or that. It's, you're doing this with the people that you love, some of the people you love most in the world.
Yeah. And I know you've carried those friendships forward today. And I imagine you still call those people your closest friends.
Absolutely. Yes. Yeah. And, I'm fortunate that home for them is my home. So whenever they come home, I get to see them. And right now I have Trish Regan texted me today that she's home. Megan Jex is coming home next week. Colleen's coming home. So when I find out they're in town, like, I will drop just about anything. I will cancel. I hate to say that, but I'll cancel plans with anybody to go see them.
Yeah. Sorry, people out there.
Yeah.
If you're one of the people she's canceled on.
I was able to squeeze them in, but no, they're, can't imagine my life without them.
Yeah. And then, you know, you go to college just up the road at Purdue, All-American swimmer, certainly a leader on the team. What was your collegiate experience like? And, you know, what do you think you took away from that experience?
Yeah, I mean, college swimming was awesome. I loved it. It was, at a certain point, it wasn't really a question. I knew that that was going to be part of my path. And it was just a matter of where that was going to happen. And ended up that I stayed in Indiana. My whole family went to IU, so I was a bit of the black sheep. But got my whole family in Purdue shirts at one point. They might have since been burned, but that did happen. But no, it was really great. I think coming from Carmel, I understood the value of team and culture, and wanted to be, felt very prepared to be an active player in that from the start, or at least wanted to be. And yeah, I mean, I think just because of probably age and phase of life, I gained a lot of self-awareness during that time and probably valued being on a team more than I ever had before. I certainly valued it in high school, probably more from the friendship standpoint, and probably more from the athletic standpoint in college, and get a lot of resources and opportunities to grow as a leader there, and a lot of people that were investing in me to develop those skills. And swimming was amazing there. I wouldn't change it for the world, but when I look back on that, the resources and opportunities I was given in terms of leadership in my development as a person are what I value most.
Yeah, and I think that just leads us to really why you're here on this podcast today. And, you know, you obviously felt the passion, like you talked about it when you were younger, this passion for the water, and then you developed these leadership skills when you went to college. But you had a decision to make, right? You came back, you're like, hey, I'm gonna live at home, I'm gonna volunteer at a local, you know, JMF, Joseph Malley Foundation, and help the youth, and I'm gonna coach, right? And then it came to time to like, well, I'm going to apply to school, or, hey, you know, Chris offered me this job and what am I going to do with my life? You were kind of at a crossroads. And how did, like, what made you say, hey, you know what, you know, swim coaching, I want to see where this takes.
Yeah. I was pretty set on not staying and not being a swim coach for really no reason. Just because I felt like I had a plan and I didn't want to deviate from it. And I remember at juniors in San Antonio, well, even before that, I'd been coaching for like 2 months and we're at senior state and you were like, okay, so if I said Rhiannon and junior nationals, what would you think? And I was like, work's taking me on a trip. Yeah. Like, let's go. Like, and so I was like, okay, cool. And then I remember being at the meet in the car with Ian and him basically offering me a job, a full-time job. And without hesitation, I was like, no, I don't want to do this. And at that point, that was still just my rehearsed answer. I wasn't ready to commit to anything. So the answer was no. And then at Winter Juniors, I remember it was time to be like really cracking down on these grad school applications, and I really didn't want to do it. And I remember you saying, like, if you don't even want to fill out the application, are you sure you want to go? And my answer was still yes, because I was not ready to admit anything yet. And then I don't remember when, but sometime that January, I was like, okay, they already offered me a job and I said no. Like, what do I do now? Because I don't want to go to school and this feels like my only option. And I've said no. But I don't honestly remember how that conversation went. I think it was on the pool deck. Like, I think it came up and I was not prepared to be having it yet, but I was like, here we go. And obviously I'm still working here. So
you're doing a fantastic job. And I think we get to talk about it because, you know, certainly in our sport, you don't see a whole lot of female coaches, especially in leadership roles. And the fact that you have worked your way to it, you've demonstrated your ability to lead. You get offered a college job every other day, it seems like. I commence eye roll from you. But, you know, like, let's just talk about it. You've had it. You talked about it just the other day. You were like, all right, we're going to throw you in the fire. Rhiannon, you're going to lead this meeting. And, you know, what was it like at first and how has that changed over time? I know your confidence levels had to go up during this time to become this many ways, you know, hate to say it, you probably hate to say it, but like role model for a lot of athletes today.
Well, thank you for saying that. That is what I aspire to be, but I don't know if I would ever call myself that. But I appreciate you saying that. Yeah, it was very scary at first, feeling honestly just like, I would say, pretty unequipped to nobody's fault but my, just to nobody's fault, but just like, okay, why do I even have this job? Like, do I just have this job because I'm a woman? I've heard people say that about me. Like, I didn't really know. So, I'm going to digress a little bit, but I think, you know, that's how my brain works. I think about like 8 things at a time. But some point in the first couple of years I was working here, I read Presence by Amy Cuddy. And I distinctly remember reading the page where she basically defines imposter syndrome. And I'd never heard of it till that point in my life. And I was like, holy cow. Like that, like I've never read something that resonated more with me. And it may have been right around the time TJ and Ian both left the club and it was just you and I running high performance. And I felt so in over my head. And by in over my head, I mean unequipped, not the right person, not doing a good job. And reading that was like a little bit of assurance, or it wasn't necessarily assurance. It was just that little bit of like, hey, maybe this isn't true. And because those weren't certainly feelings that I was verbalizing to anybody. So to hear that and be like, okay, there's a chance this isn't true. There's a chance that you do know what you're doing. And there is a chance that you are good enough to be doing this. There is a chance that it will be okay if you do the wrong thing. Was honestly a huge turning point for me, because I would be lying if I told you I don't feel that way at least once a month right now. And there, it will just out of nowhere, I'll just be like, oh my gosh, like how would I don't know what I'm doing. Like who am I to be coaching these kids? And I mean, I don't want that to sound bad, but I think that's important for people to hear, because that was just huge for me. Going back to your question, I think I felt that way and had no way to navigate that in the very beginning. And in the same breath, I'll say I didn't have a lot of experience. I didn't have a lot of knowledge in the sport of swimming other than being a swimmer. I wasn't someone that studied swimming. I didn't really ask a lot of questions about workouts as an athlete. And hopefully you'd agree, I started asking more questions. Like, if I want to have more knowledge, I'm going to have to gain it. I can't just sit around and wait for it to like permeate into my brain. And so I would say I'm definitely much more confident now, but more than anything, I'm much more okay with not being right. And that makes me feel more confident going into a situation that it's not about getting it right. It's just about doing your best.
Yeah. And I think people appreciate, you know, 2 things, vulnerability and authenticity. And you demonstrated both, like, hey, I might not know how to do this, but I'm going to figure it out. And I know that about you. And I don't think there's any question. You're always going to be real with people, but I mean, you do it in a way that people respect. Right. And I think you've earned their respect. And just talking about that, you know, you have to lead, you know, high school students, some of the best swimmers in America, both men and women. You know, talk about, you know, the leadership that you've had and the experiences that, you know, that have helped you become, you know, both the female role model and leader, but also like, what's it like coaching male athletes too? And how have you gained their respect?
Okay, so the first part is, can you repeat the first
part? Sure. No, if you talked about what, you know, you've become a role model, you've taken on these leadership things, how have you developed that sense for both the female part, you know, you take on that, we've talked about, that was kind of, right. I think, a little bit more natural for you to do that. You know, you take your experiences from Purdue, but, you know, the leading the men's side is probably a little different role. And maybe I just interested to hear your experience from your perspective on that.
Right. Okay. Yeah. So yeah, coaching the girls, I think, was initially a little bit more intuitive to me. a little bit more natural and easy, especially coming in and coaching at 22. Like you're very close in age with them. I was friends with some of their sisters. I mean, so I already knew some of them. So that specifically the girls, and I think that helped a lot. I think you can agree or disagree. I don't think I was always the kindest person in high school. And like I was saying earlier, in college, gained a little bit more self-awareness and just became very fascinated by human behavior. And when I first started coaching, there was five of us. There was you, TJ, Chris, not you, you're Chris, you, TJ, Faf, and Ian. And so I think the girls more naturally gravitated to me. I don't want to make it that simple, because I don't ever want to say that I'm good at my job just because I'm a woman or something. But I think they gravitated to me. They were happy to have another woman around or another female around. And so I was able to connect with them because they were making an effort to also connect with me. And given that, okay, they're talking to me a lot, they're sharing with me, and just seeing, like, they were just sharing so much with me. And it was like, it was very shocking to me to feel that trusted by them. And I still felt like a child myself. And so there was just kind of this moment where it was like, okay, like these people, these young girls in some of the most formative times of their life are trusting you with, I mean, so, like, I think I say it a lot. I feel like I've seen the depths of some of their souls, like the things they're willing to share, like some of their darkest moments, I get the tail end of or right in the middle of it. And they're very honest, and it's hard to hear sometimes, but realizing that you are the trusted adult in their life that they're coming to with these things, whether it be about swimming or about school or about life, it's just kind of like once you hear those things, you can't unhear them. So you're going to have to figure out a way to help coach them better and connect with them. I don't know if that makes sense.
That makes sense to me. And I think what I see you too is like I think the advantage you have when you're younger is like, I know what you're feeling. I have this experience, or I can closely relate, right? And there's a relation and they trust you because of that. And having just gone through it, especially at your alma mater, right? You know the pressure that comes with being, you know, winning year after year and having that come on your shoulder, so to speak, when you're swimming here. And I think they valued you for that and they gravitated towards that. But at the same time, it wasn't like you rested on your laurels. You were like, Chris, what is it? Like, she came to me and told me this. Well, how do I deal with this? And we would talk things through, and I would read books, and I think you would talk to all kinds of people and get all kinds of perspective. So it wasn't like, yeah, I know this. Like, it was more like you were like, I'm going to learn this.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And you would ask a lot of questions. And then let's talk about the boys. You're talking about some of the best boy swimmers. And, you know, how do you think I think you want to say like you've gained their respect, but I think you have, but there's also a part where you're like, am I capable? Did they want to be coached by me? But I think you've just embraced that too.
Right. Talk about that. I think experience is often your best teacher, and I learned through a lot of mistakes. I don't want to call anybody out now, so I won't share specific examples, but because it certainly wasn't their fault. But I understand probably, not, I don't want to make it so like just binary, like girls, right, boys, but like, right, I understood like how to, my only experience is being a woman. So I understand a little bit easier, more intuitively, how to connect with them better, I think. I don't know what it's like to be a teenage boy. I don't. and I can't. So I really just probably didn't coach them for the first year. Probably didn't even try. Well, I did try and I didn't know how. I didn't know how to connect with them. Like, and I think you kind of make the mistake of thinking you can maybe be a little bit tougher at certain times when, you know, they weren't ready for it. And that's, they weren't ready for it. That wasn't the right thing. I don't know. I'm just trying to figure out how I want to say this. I think up until that point, my only experience with teenage boys was, for the most part, them probably trying to hide their emotions from me. And now being in charge of them, like, I didn't understand the depth of their feelings and emotions because they hadn't been shared with me as freely, maybe as when I was a teenager or something. So I just completely misunderstood them. And I think particularly as they got older, sometimes a few more of them would try and push your buttons. And I would respond pretty negatively to that, feeling like I was feeling like either, okay, like they don't respect me and they're now showing the whole team that, and now no one respects me. Like, it went 0 to 60 real quick in my head. And, I think I've just learned to be a little bit more, take a step back in those moments and see it from a little bit further away and see it not about me, but about them. And instead of saying like, why are they saying this to me? Why are they saying this?
Yeah.
Because yeah, that's the same thought process I was using for the girls. Like, I knew, okay, you can't take the stuff the girls say personally. You can't. But I was taking everything the boys were saying personally.
Right.
And yeah.
So over time, you definitely have gotten, I would say, perspective on that. And that's a great point. And I think you just slowly over time, as you do the job, you just get better at coming in and reading people and knowing where to put your energy and adapting what you do and trusting those around you to help you through it. We've all made mistakes. We've all, you know, said things we wish we could take back. But, you know, I think the most important thing is that we value the relationship. We want the relationship to work. We're there to help people. And at your heart and your core, I know that's true. And I think those are the things that override, you know, kind of the growing pains is becoming a coach.
Yeah.
And we need more people to be out there and learn and to develop. And I have a question to you, Rhiannon, if you could go back and talk to your, you know, college senior self, what would you say to her?
College senior, I would tell her that, I'd probably tell her that it is okay to not have a plan.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I mean, that was pretty much my whole journey of getting into coaching was about having a plan. And I was so afraid to like deviate from the plan in that unknown. Cause you know, I mean, I don't know if you felt this way, but like you didn't realize it at the time because you felt like you did have so much independence and freedom, but like with swimming, your whole life was pretty planned. It wasn't like, where am I going to go? It's just, how am I going to get there? And like, you knew you were going to swim in college, but where? Or that's the opposite of what I said. but like, you just knew. There wasn't quite as much ambiguity. There was, the decisions were about, okay, not do I go to college or do I swim? It's, where do I swim in college? What a lucky question to be able to ask yourself. And getting into my senior year, a lot of people didn't have a plan. And I was like, I have a plan. And I just wasn't ready to think about it and to do that. So I think if I had permission to not have a plan at that age, I would have, it would have saved me a lot of stress.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, so leads me to my next question. You know, what do you think the athletes of today face? What do you think their biggest challenges that our current athletes see?
Yeah. I mean, I know you and I talk about this a lot, and I just, social media, I could get on a soapbox for a really long time. Having grown up with it only from like age 16 on, I can just point to a lot of ways it's really messed with my confidence and self-esteem and just general like happiness being where I'm at. And I just see these kids that have grown up with it since like age 9, age 10, and just the pressure I feel like kids feel for school, for swimming, to get everything right and to have all of it. Not that people didn't used to care about it, but they care about it to a fault, to a place that's debilitating, to a point that they don't want to do any of it anymore. And every time you open up social media, you may not be making like a conscious comparison, but it's just happening. You're immediately looking at like what this person looks like or what they're thinking or the great ideas they have. And I don't think it leaves a lot of space to think for yourself.
Yeah.
And we can't get rid of it, but I think it just has added a whole new layer to the stress and pressure that they're feeling.
Yeah, I think we're seeing that more and more in our sport. The levels of anxiety are rising, and you know, the skills that I'm trying to acquire is how do I deal with anxious and more anxious athletes today than 10, 15 years ago. And I have to continually adapt and learn. And and social media is a big part of that. You know, what advice, if kids were listening today, the athletes were listening, what would you tell them about social media and how to deal with that?
Oh gosh.
I put you on the spot.
Yeah. I mean, that's just like a big question because it is an important thing to me. So I do want to answer it the way I want to. I think I would just tell them to be very, very careful or choosy about who and what they follow.
Yeah. Because you're kind of like letting people into your life, right? And they say like, you got to be wary who's in your circle. And in so many ways, by following all these social media accounts, you're letting way more people in your circle than normal, than we're probably supposed to have as humans, right? We're probably not supposed to be surrounded by this many people influenced. And maybe, do you think it brings down, and I'm just thinking out loud now, like it takes away a little bit from the people who are close to you and care about you if you just continue to follow these social media accounts and what they say? Because like, I think some of these things I read, I'm like, that has no bearing on how I'm feeling today or should, but I know somehow it is in my brain.
Yeah. I mean, I just think I think sometimes it presents too many ideas. Like your brain doesn't have enough time to process all of them. And like, as someone who like went through high school and college with it, it definitely takes you away from the present moment because. And like the reason I deleted some of it for a while and some of the different like apps I haven't re-downloaded, because I would literally be like at a, you know, out with friends or doing whatever and figuring out how I could make it into a cool story. Like that's just so wrong. But I think that thought process has just become second nature. How do I get this fun moment out to people? And you see some of those stories or like memes of like bloggers, like what it looked like and what it really happened. Like people set up a picnic with their little baby and got these cute outfits and they didn't eat any of it. They just took their kid to the park, set up a picnic and left. And that's real. Like that's the reality of it. And so I think, but you also do that when you're just sitting with friends, like, oh, I have to make sure everyone knows, like, I had all this fun on Friday. I had so many people at my house. We had a great time. And like, why does anybody need to know that?
Yeah. Yeah.
They don't.
They don't, right?
But I think it definitely takes away from the present moment in just about every way.
Yeah. And, you know, I think that's all great points. And, you know, we're going to have to continue to adapt and work with it. And it's just the trends, they continually change. And who knows even what's next?
Yeah.
The TikTok thing. I mean, that thing's exploded.
Yeah.
In the past couple of years. So let's finish with some a little bit lighter questions, perhaps. Okay. A little bit more fun. So I know you're an advocate listener because you, we've quizzed our group on this. So
we have.
Who would you like to do a social kick with?
Okay, I've been thinking about this. So I would do it with, so a group of people that I swam with at Carmel. We have a Zoom book club now. And, but the reason that I came to that conclusion was because last August, a group of friends and I that I swam with at Carmel, we went to Yosemite. And one day we were like hanging out this like little lake in the middle of the mountains. And we were like, okay, let's swim across it. And someone in our group actually wasn't a swimmer and was like, I can't do that. Like, there's no way I can swim across there. And so the four of us swam across this lake. And I don't know, it wasn't until afterwards that I realized just like how cool that was, because not everyone can do it. Like, part of the group didn't come because they literally, they couldn't do it. And two, like, the last time I swam with all of them, I was 18. And to be able to continue to have those shared experiences with them, like, there's only certain people that I can do that with. And so I would love to social kick with my book club.
Well, that's a well-prepared answer. You had that one ready. That's great. I love it.
Maggie and I were talking about it yesterday, and I was like, you know what? I think I'm going to say this.
What three songs were on your pre-race playlist?
Oh my gosh. My computer said I could look up my old college playlists and tell you. I think there was definitely a Macklemore song on there. Probably a Beyonce song. Maybe a Taylor Swift song.
Okay. And what song would you least like to pop up during workout?
Oh my gosh. You know what song I really hate is, it's old. It's like from when I was in high school. It's called Feel Good Inc. by the Gorillaz.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I know that song.
I can't stand it.
All right. If you could post a billboard at the pool for everyone to read, what would it say?
Oh my gosh. I feel like there are billboards of this. I don't want it to sound cliche because I don't think it's cliche, but I would probably have a billboard that said, you are enough.
Oh, that's good. Yeah. All right. Would you rather swim in the deep end or shallow end?
Deep end.
Long warm up or short warm up?
Short.
Early to the block or last to the block?
Last.
Last, yeah. What is your perfect IM order?
Yeah. Breaststroke would be first, so I could get an extra long dive and glide on the first 25. Then backstroke, freestyle, butterfly.
Backstroke. So you're going like your two worst up front.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
But I feel like the true 200 flyers will prevail with fly at the end.
There you go. Right. Kickboard or no kickboard?
That depends. I definitely, if like I'm trying to make an interval, like I'm in practice, I want to go on my back, but in my more recreational swimming days these days, I love kicking with kickboard. Right.
Would you rather be in a pool that's too cold or too warm?
Too cold. Well, lane, if it's practice.
Practice, right. Lane leader or caboose?
Caboose.
Do you remember the last argument you had with your coach when you were a swimmer? I don't either, but I don't either, but I was just wondering if you did.
John and I didn't really argue. I'm sure
it was something stupid.
So. I know you and I definitely argued about a wiffle ball.
Oh, yeah. Okay. There you go. That's great.
But I do make people swim with wiffle balls under their chin, so I don't know if I want to share that story.
what's your favorite Gatorade color?
Red. We did not have red Gatorade at Purdue because it stained the pool deck, or maybe because it was IU colors. I don't know. Maybe they were.
Yeah, maybe, yeah.
But every big meet, my mom would bring a 6-pack of red Gatorade for me.
Go. Way to go, Lisa.
I know.
As we finish up here, Rhiannon, anything you would like to say before we wrap up?
That's a hard question. I have so much I want to say.
How much time do we have here?
I mean, I think we talked a fair amount about the, whether it's me being a woman in coaching or coaching boys or the opposite gender. And I just think for me, and I think for anybody out there, like I don't think you have to look at it in that way. And I think like you're going to be the only person that limits yourself. And, If you want to be good at something, like, keep doing it. I don't think anybody else can tell you otherwise, and including yourself.
Right. Most importantly, yourself, right?
Right.
Yeah. Well, Rhiannon, this has been fun. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me.